So we continue our class. Today is our last class. So we want to try to see how to cover lots of closure territory today. So we see a few people still coming in. Maybe some people, yesterday's session was a little too much. They decided they've had enough. We are a bunch of angry people in here. Mad, frustrated, energetic, and active. And so we sent a lot of people to Yamaraj yesterday, or Yamaraj to deal with some of the offenders, or those who have given us pain. So, as we look farther at what forgiveness is, in contrast to what it is not, as we look closer at how to live for the future, for translators, Russian devotees in the back of this side, and if we have any devotees only speaking Spanish, we're translating this corner over here yesterday. Maybe the other mothers will come in later. So, we're distinctly finding that forgiveness is something we appreciate is a powerful sadhu quality. It is inherently necessary because in the material world, we will constantly get disappointed. And unfortunately, sometimes we will disappoint others. We will constantly be misunderstood. And sometimes we are the ones who are misunderstanding. And those who we try to give our hearts to the most, those who we try to communicate with the most, those who we expect the most from, often they are the ones who don't follow through. And when they don't, it really hits us. It really penetrates our psyche. And because of that, it can cause all kinds of physical and emotional and spiritual blocks. We want to have less and less things interfering with our chance to be more spiritual. We want to have less and less things causing us not to be able to appreciate others. And we want to have definitely less situations interfering with our ability to grow. And so I want to share one story of a conflict with a particular person who used to give me so much pain. Is that we did the interactive exchange yesterday with Gaurangi and Prashanta. Lastly, I was thinking of a time that I was in that same kind of space. And I want to share it as we wait for a few more people to come in and then go into our major work today. Many years ago, when we were serving Srila Prabhupada through the library party. And so we had quite a group of rather dominant, opinionated, strong men. And this was perhaps a quality that was helping us to be very forward in our work. But all of us together, it was quite awesome, quite difficult. Anyway, myself and one of the devotees was pretty much responsible for most of the training. And we were diametrically opposites to such an extent. If he said red, I said green or blue. If I said white, he said black. It was like we just could not think and accept the same things practically on anything. And it was like so intense. It was very bewildering to him as well as myself. I had practically never encountered anyone who everything they did and said was just agitating. And I considered myself to be a rather tolerant person. I thought I was peaceful. And there was no peace with this person at all. I couldn't even fake it. I couldn't fake being compassionate, kind, respectful. It's just everything he said bothered me, and everything I did bothered him twice as much. And we had to work together and travel so many different countries and different places. And it was quite awesome. And so major duty, at one point, the Satsuma Maharaj, who was at that time our in charge of our party, was just keeping us from fighting. I mean, his main service, because we sort of knew the work ourselves, but the main service was how to keep us from expressing various types of overt anxieties toward each other. So, Prabhupada wrote us many letters explaining. Prashanta isn't here, she isn't here to hear this, so somebody tell it to her later. So, Prabhupada wrote us letters explaining how the work was so important. And here we were doing this work we understood was very important, but somehow we couldn't appreciate each other's offering so that each of us would feel more comfortable in what we're doing and be able to serve Prabhupada with more zeal, enthusiasm, and confidence. So at one point we were in Chicago, we come back to America, came back to America, and things were just at their height of confusion between the two of us. It became even difficult for us to be in the same, you know, in the same room together, because the energy, the chemistry was just so different, so intense, and we were carrying all kind of things on our shoulders, I guess, from the past. So we were in Chicago, and his party went to a certain area of the city, and mine went to another. And we put each other in so much anxiety that he came back early. And I also had come back early, a little after him, I assume. But to my amazement, I was going into the temple room, and I looked and I saw him in front of the deities. And he was quite a big guy, you know, very kind of a macho person. I don't think he would mind, because we talk about this. It was Mahabodhi, if anybody knew him. He's a very tense, aggressive person, and big, you know, physically also. So here he had this really big hunk of a brahmachari. Time he was brahmachari and I was brahmachari. He was just crying like a baby in front of the deities. And something just clicked. And what clicked to me was that I was looking at how much pain he was giving me, but I had no idea how much intense pain I was giving him. So here we both were so much pain that day that we couldn't do our service. And so he went out and took his men out and got them going. I took mine. And we both were coming back because we were blown out. So he was coming back. I came back. He came back earlier. And there he was in the temple, being very sad that our relationship was so, you know, so much on the rocks, was so intense. And feeling very sad that he was causing me anxiety. And I was just previously just thinking how sad I was that he was causing me anxiety, and not considering how much anxiety I was causing him. We knew we were causing each other problems, but still somehow it wasn't clicking of how much more we could do if we were able to appreciate, you know, each other's differences. And there was quite differences. So when I saw that, it allowed me to see it differently. And some of our issues and our problems, we're giving you all of this discussion and we're doing all of the interactive and we're reflecting on the acharyas and we're looking at some social, psycho, spiritual ways of approaching things. But actually all of that's secondary to really praying more deeply, vandanam, and asking Krishna to help you to see it differently. Asking Krishna to help you to be able to use whatever is going on in a way that it can help you to serve him better and perhaps help the person or help the environment. And so as we have more destitute mood in this way, Krishna will allow something to happen that can help us. Because ultimately, these kind of things are never going to stop. As long as the material world is existing, there's always going to be those who are trying to play Krishna, those who are trying to inquire or observe the opulences of the Lord. And in the process of that, they are trespassing, abusing, and they are assaulting and hurting others. And that is the nature of the material world. It's a place of just those getting hurt and those hurting and offenders and those who are receivers of the offense. And that is the basic part. The history of the material world is struggles of power and lots of ahamkara and false ego that's maintaining, you know, the three modes of material nature. So, what dawned on me is that we both don't have to change. If one of us would sufficiently change, it would change the relationship. So as I saw how much he was in pain, I realized for him, as a macho guy as he is, for him to be crying was a sign that his pain was probably even more than mine. And so after that, I started just acting totally different, trying to appreciate the fact that yes, whatever I was feeling, he's feeling, and even more. Or there's two ways of looking at this. It's much more than just what I'm seeing or thinking or feeling. It's a whole relationship issue going on. And we both have some ability to make a difference by what we do different. We can both do together differently, or one of us can do. And it can change the chemistry of the relationship. So then I decided, I'm going to stop giving this devotee who's doing so much service to Prabhupada pain, and I'm damn sure going to stop letting him give me pain. And I'm going to try to see how something can come wonderful of this, because no accident that somehow we have to serve together. So then it just dawned on me, it was so obvious, but it just dawned on me. We are so different. If we can share and use our differences, we'll have so much more variables, resources, and facility to approach every project that we were doing. And that happened. And so instead of us being so different and at odds with each other and not being able to practically be in the same room with each other, it's that when we were strategizing, we got to a point that we could very overtly express our differences and then put those differences together to see, okay, now you are having this strategy in trying to serve, I'm having this strategy about what we feel we're going to do now in this country, now let's put it together. And for quite a while, until he perhaps made a shift with his Gaudiya Vaishnava connection, we were like best friends. Although we were like intense, you know, couldn't tolerate, appreciate each other, gave each other so much pain. And by seeing, oh, we were so different, we could complement each other and have something even greater in ways to analyze how to do services. So this is one personal example I was thinking about when I was reflecting yesterday. We were having Mother Gurangi and Mother Prashanta to look at their relationship and the way that they're giving each other pain, and that if somehow such dynamic mothers can look closer at what each other are offering, that is of great service to the guru and to the devotees, and realize how much the pain is going on both sides and how much neither of them really want that, and then to be ready, at least one of them to be ready to make a difference. And if even one person is making a steady difference, it puts loving pressure on the other person to also to act in a different way. Okay, so we want to read a few short passages on forgiveness, and then we want to call maybe two volunteers. How do you call two volunteers? We want to ask two people to volunteer to share their personality that they have been researching or reflecting on, to allow us all to reflect closer on how that person forgave. And we'll look at our codes there. Here's a passage from Srimad Bhagavatam 1927. As far as salvation is concerned, One has to conquer the principle of lust, anger, unlawful desires, avarice, and bewilderment. To get freedom from anger, one should learn how to forgive. To be free from unlawful desires, one should not make plans. By spiritual culture, one is able to conquer sleep. By tolerance, only can one conquer desires and avarice. Disturbance from various diseases can be avoided by regulated diets. By self-control, one can be free from false hopes. I just gave a 10-minute story, Prasanta, just for you. Somehow I missed my timing. Anyway, ask someone to reveal the story I just told. Dizziness can be conquered by rising up, and false arguments can be conquered by factual ascertainment. Talkative Ogurangi, you just proved that you were right. You said she's always late, right? No, she's early for the next day. Dizziness can be conquered. See, I'm adding to the hurt. Talkativeness can be avoided by gravity and silence. And by prowess, one can avoid fearfulness. Perfect knowledge can be attained by self-cultivation. One must be free from lust, anger, etc. Here's a lecture from Bhagavatam 1 of 12.2.1. And Shama, because Shama is Sanskrit for forgiveness. Shama means forgiveness. Suppose I have done wrong, but there is no forgiveness. Shama Rupa Tashpasvinaha. People are advised, especially those who are following penance and austerity, principles of devotional life, they should learn to excuse. In our dealings, there are many faulty dealings between ourselves and others. So if we take everything very seriously, then it's very difficult to live. So Shama, but that Shama means forgiveness. Forgiveness. Nobody will forgive. Retaliation, vengeance, that will increase. Prabhupada in the conversation in 9474. Prabhupada speaking. This is sadhu. The first qualification is tatikshava, very tolerant. And Chanaka Pandit has said, Shama Rupa Tashpasvinaham. Those who are tapasvis, their first duty is how to be forgiving. How much he has learned to forgive. Tapasya brahmacharyena samena damenaha. So what is the explanation? This is a letter to Garga Muni, 1.11.68. I am glad to learn that your cooperation for this society is appreciated by the authorities. We should learn to forget and to forgive. Minor incidents, because whenever there are two men in a place, there's always some misunderstanding. Such misunderstanding happens even between husband and wife. What to speak of others? But we have to adjust things on the basis of Krishna consciousness. We should always remember that Krishna consciousness is a challenge to the modern misguided human society, and we have to meet many unfavorable incidents. But if we are sincere to Krishna and to the spiritual master, combinedly, then everything will be favorably settled. We should always remember that Krishna consciousness can only remain on two parallel lines. Chant Hare Krishna sincerely, and all good intelligence, consultation shall come from within. Krishna says that those who are engaged in my service, I give intelligence for his progressive march. Then, and Prabhupada is saying here, to teach you, a devotee forgets and forgives any offense against him. A Vaishnava is personally detached from his material body, which is made of pus, stew, blood, and so on. Therefore, the devotee is able to overlook the obnoxious behavior he sometimes meets within the course of preaching work, and always deals with people as a perfect gentleman. A Vaishnava loudly chants the holy name of the Lord and tolerates and forgives those fallen conditioned souls who are unable to reciprocate properly with a pure devotee. Last, from Bhagavatam 11.3.24, this is a lecture. The word tatiksham, or tolerance, indicates that a transcendentalist must be forgiving. The material world is full of embarrassing and irritating situations, and unless one is inclined to be very much forgiving, he will become infected by a vindictive mentality which spoils one's spiritual consciousness. So in so many ways, Prabhupada is letting us know it's not really an option. It's not just something that, you know, is extracurricular or something that we do, you know, in our spare time or when it feels good. But it's an integral part of sadhu consciousness. It's an integral part of recognizing we're not these minds, we're not these bodies. Integral part of being more concerned about someone else, being the servant of the servant, having the compassion to want to see the best for each person, and having the energy and determination to do something that guarantees that the person's higher essence is being thought about. Now, it doesn't mean that in a proper Vaishnava society that there should not be chastisement. There must be chastisement that coincides with the quality or the caliber of the deviation of the crime. Because if there's no calling out of the wrong or the evil, then there's no honoring of the good. To honor the good, to support the good, we must address the evil, address the deviation. But the deviation is called out, and punishment and chastisement is to be administered, and after such there is to be full forgiveness. Not that we ignore what happened, internalize it, repress it as if it didn't happen, or do we hold on to it and maintain such anger and incoherence, but we are to do what we can if we are in a position to address it and to free ourselves. We said to name it, to face it, to feel it, and then to release it. So we evaluate where is it coming from, this hurt that we're experiencing, where exactly is it coming, and how has it come upon us. We face it to evaluate the quality, the caliber of it. We allow ourselves to feel it, to see why we want to grab it and throw it away. And then, of course, we release it. Sometimes it can happen rather easily. We use our intelligence to do the processing. Sometimes our intelligence wants to forgive, but the mind and the senses, being too disturbed by what has happened, finds difficulty. But that means we have to then identify less with being a mind. And many times it's hard to forgive because our bodies were the victims. But then, are we really accepting that we are only that body? Or are we realizing that we are using this body, and we've had so many other bodies, and the bodies are full of disappointment to us, and other persons' bodies can disappoint us, and there's sometimes aggregate and collective disappointment because the body, it cheats us and disappoints us. It gets old, it gets diseased, it dies. It feels phobias, agitations, disturbances, lust, etc. Okay, I want to call on the devotees who are doing Ambarish Maharaj. Raise your hand. Are they here? The two devotees who had Ambarish? Okay. Huh? The two of you have Ambarish? I'll come back while you're deciding who's going to speak up. The devotee who had Lord Nityananda? Who had Lord Nityananda? Yourself and is your partner here? So, which of you are going to summarize for us? Mm-hmm. Where's the other mic? So, give her this mic. So, while she is explaining a particular pastime of Lord Nityananda being forgiving, showing us the science of forgiving, we're going to look at our 7 points and see which of the areas are dominant in this pastime. So we have 7 different areas, of course, that we're looking at. Each pastime that we reflect on, we first try to see if there was a manifestation of anger. and if there was anger, how the anger was given up. Or I call here OB, if in that pastime it was overlooked, the bad, whatever it was, existed of course, but it was overlooked and there was a dominant reflection on the good. Or we look to see if in a particular pastime that's being shared, if resentment and anger were not even present. To what degree did the person take responsibility for the encounter? Where did they see themselves involved in somehow playing a part in that? Five, is there a sign that they accepted the faith and relied on Krishna? And these last two, which we see from the very powerful sadhus, that even when they are offended, we see that they are the well-wishers. They assist the person who offended them to advance. And we see in these cases of special sadhus how they preached nicely and even influenced the offender. Someone gave them emotional hurt, offended them, assaulted them, were in an abusive mood toward them, but they did not play into the duality, but instead they converted the person, transformed the person, preached to the individual, took those that environment as a chance to glorify Krishna by their own activity and through their speech. So their achar, their prachar produce sadachar, their speech and their actions produce wonderful behavior. So in this way, they did not shut down their own love. They did not allow Samayosis Maya to cause them to go into Maya. They did not let a situation that has been a part of their life space to consider that it was just an accident. In other words, they were never minimizing the fact that whatever happens to us, there is something that has taken place for us to learn from that experience. That whatever happens to us, if we really want to, there's always opportunity to think of Krishna more, and in many cases to serve Krishna more based on what happens. But if we are only able to serve Krishna when things are going well, that is not a high level devotee. We're only appreciating Krishna's presence when things are very harmonious. That is not seeing Krishna at all times or trying to find Krishna at all times. Being Krishna conscious literally means that somehow we are always maintaining that greed, eager to connect more with Krishna. So she's going to share a pastime of Lord Nityananda that expresses shama or forgiveness.
Okay. Hare Krishna. I'm just going to give a brief outline. It's Lord Chaitanya Jagannath Mahaprabhu.
Okay.
We all know that Lord Chaitanya came down to deliver all conditioned souls. Lord Chaitanya, through the spirit trying to deliver all conditioned souls, they came across two brothers, Jagannath Mahaprabhu. So they're trying to deliver these all conditioned souls, but then they started preaching to them. And they're chanting. So these brothers, they're so demoniac that they actually do not hear the holy name. So one of the brothers, this Jaga, he hits Lord Nityananda on the head. And then Lord Chaitanya got really upset, and he was going to use his dirt to take off the brother's head. So Lord Nityananda, why is so much pain? I mean, God only experienced pain, but he was down. He said, "No, stop! What are you doing? Remember our purpose for being here?" And Lord Chaitanya got pacified a little bit, and then he thought, okay, we're here to deliver the four conditioned souls. So I would think that Lord Chaitanya was a well-wisher, and he preached very nicely.
Okay, very good. Lord Chaitanya ki. So, in this pastime, we see very prominent that in the case of Lord Nityananda, he did not just rely on anger, so it was no question of giving up the anger. That not only did he overlook the bad and saw the good, saw an opportunity to be able to help others by transforming them, but we see very dominant that he was a well-wisher, and of course that he assisted them in their advancement by preaching and reflecting on the fact that in Kali Yuga, practically everybody's having so much issues and stuff, and instead of destroying them, make them devotees, transform them. This is really the basic essence of the mission of Krishna consciousness, is that we are obviously not to engage and join the Maya, nor are we to waste so much energy in a combative arena with others, or even with our own mind and senses, but our duty is transformation. How can we very conscientiously, meticulously, and tactfully be able to offer everything back to Krishna, and even have anxiety that we don't have more to offer? When we're having this anger and hurt, then it means that we're going to have less to be able to offer Krishna. Less productivity in our service, less creativity, less energy, because that energy is being transformed now into, as we were saying, sometimes making us physically sick, emotionally disturbed, and spiritually shut down, and sometimes bankrupt. Because there are times when the anger can be of such an extent, and the hurt, that we are acting on revenge, and as we act on revenge, then we make all types of offenses and also aparads. Okay, I'm going to take 10 minutes to summarize much of what we discuss up until this point, so that our last exercises that we do today, we can be totally present with some of the points from the earlier days. So we kind of began with emphasizing that in modern day times, the best way we learn is distinctly by teaching. That we can learn so much by hearing. Kali Yuga, our senses are very dull. And so as we're hearing, the mind is doing a lot of other stuff, which is what we're going to show today also. Because the idea of this course is how we can appreciate Vaishnavas more, how we can be less distracted by somebody else's maya as well as our own, how we can have more faith in spite of the many, many things that happen to us that are inauspicious. How we can literally create more of an avenue to become more Krishna conscious. So we normally remember in general about 10% of what we read, 20% of what we hear, 30% of what we see, and 50% of what we hear, see, 70% of what we discuss, 80% of what we participate in, and 90% of what we teach. And this is why most of our emphasis in this course has been in these three areas. Discussions, participation. We are asking everybody to participate. Some are speaking up directly as you come forth, or as you engage in the dyads, everybody sharing and reflecting. And hopefully when you took your papers home, your printouts, that you have been reflecting on those, and you keep those because you can be able to come back to that later at times when you need to access a deeper level of forgiveness. We had this code, gave up anger, overlooked the bad, saw the good, no resentment or anger, took responsibility, accepted fate, well-wisher, preached. And I gave you the story of Koresh. We started off in relationship to Ramanujacharya, and also the story of Bhrigu Muni. And in the Koresh's story, servant of Ramanuja and Mahapurana, very classical situation where only these last things were dominant. That every reason to be disturbed, but they did not retaliate, have revenge, hold grudges, but ask the Lord to give them the highest benediction to liberate those treacherous souls. We looked at number three. We discussed about when we feel emotionally hurt, when we feel very disturbed, what are some of the symptoms that we experience? And we have this whole list. Many people that want revenge, feel disappointed, feel separation. Who can hurt you the most? We're discussing those who you care about the most, those who you expect the most from. When they hurt you, you feel like you want separation, you lose confidence in them or in yourself or in both. Despair, rejection, betrayal, feel betrayed. You have fear, depression, pride, anger, frustration. We're discussing how even many of us who think that we forgive have not really forgiven in a deeper level, that we've just tried to convince ourselves that we're not bothered or that we've forgiven the person. And signs that we often have not is that we can't think lovingly about that person. We can't think about something good spiritually happening to that person. Or we are holding in anxieties and it's causing some underlying friction in our psyche that's producing different types of illnesses. We looked then at this number four. That when we do forgive, then we see the total opposite. That we have many qualities that are in connection with qualities of a sadhu. We feel relief, peaceful, well-wisher, optimistic, have gratitude, self-improvement relationships, we feel loving, free to move about, happy, we focus more on the goal, we're more trustworthy, feel lighter, feel stronger, etc. So the total opposite. When we forgive, then something wonderful happens to us. And when we do not, we put our mind and emotions experiencing all of this, and we minimize some of the Krishna factor. So we looked at these negative things and tried to consider how we could change some of this hurt. Changing hurt to positive. And so we looked at revenge, reveal mind, see the goal, do something nice, and involving counseling, try to help the someone who's worse. Sometimes you have a problem, having trouble dealing with it. There's always somebody who's having something even worse than you, or even the same problem, but worse. And if you focus in that way, you empower yourself to deal with your problem also. Give another chance, be selective, gratitude, humble, and it goes on and on. Most of you wrote some of this down. Reasons why we do not forgive. So you have in your paper so many more things, but some of those that you came up with is fear of being hurt again, self-pity, hungry for attention, self-righteous, hatred, problems still there, can't forgive ourselves, afraid of change, false ego, badly wounded. So many reasons why we do not forgive. And we explain that we have a misconception about forgiving. Forgiving doesn't mean that we have to position ourselves for it to happen again. It doesn't mean that what happened wasn't bad. It doesn't mean that we become a doormat. It doesn't mean that we have to forget, because many times we want to remember so it doesn't happen again. But it definitely does mean that by forgiving, we're ready to live in the present, and we're particularly eager about the future. We're not letting the past keep jumping out, haunting us. We're not letting the past, whoever assaulted us, abused us, disappointed us, constantly do that every day as we reflect on them. We carry them for years and years and years in such a way. We are ready to accept that Krishna is our well-wisher, and for some reason he's given us some associations, various experiences, something there is for our own growth. Otherwise, how can Krishna really be the well-wisher if he's just giving us things beyond our ability to cope with? A teacher gives you lessons knowing you're going to fail, wants you to fail, would not be considered a good teacher. Teacher gives you more than you can be able to deal with, that's also not proper. We looked also, number seven, at six particular ways in addressing various types of problems, any types of problems. And of course, our major concern is Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. And as we have all of that in our background, pervading throughout our consciousness, that three other ways is sometimes we have to be more assertive with compassion and with thoughtfulness, but times we have to be more personal and assertive and communicating more our feelings or our concerns as well as our needs. And then there are times when we have to put yourself or ourselves in someone else's shoes. As Vaishnavas are concerned about others, and so we're considering what effect that may have on somebody else, how they may respond, what are their particular needs to help them to become Krishna conscious? What are the needs that they are wanting or having that could help them become Krishna conscious? And then we have disassociate. There are times when we're too close to something that the best way to appreciate is to step back and observe it, or to step back and observe others who are doing some of the same things you're doing can get a better reflection on that. Okay, I just want to have one more person to share their pastime, and then we want to go into some interactive things. Okay. Now, let me get somebody who hasn't had a chance to speak at all yet. I'm asking for a volunteer, but I'm really going to call on someone. Let's have King Chitaketu. The bodies who had Chitaketu? Okay, you've already spoken, so let me get someone else. Let's have who can we have? We have Juba. Sujat Bharat. You've been speaking also. Okay, we want to get a little more chance of persons who haven't been so active yet. Okay. Okay, one more. How about Parasaram? Who has Parasaram? Huh? Person who had they have a chance to reflect? You have a chance to look at the story of Parasaram? No? How about your partner? She's not here? Okay. Any of our Gurukula girls, you want to share your pastime? Huh? Please, come. The Heidi? Huh? Any of you want to share? Be bold, come, be assertive. Alright? Okay? Anyone? Going? We only have a minute and a half to do this. Okay, whoever has this one. See, Vidurya, being insulted by Duryodhan. Is that person here? Are they hiding out on this? Huh? Alright, give me a volunteer. You're reminding me that we're supposed to be volunteering. I'm not supposed to be imposing. All right. Where's the other mic? It's there. Volunteering is better. Then it's more organic. Okay.
The personality was Bhakti Lama Thakur. So we had it with... There are two short stories I'm telling. First, there was a royal conspiracy against him because he found out that the king of Jagannath Puri was taking some money from Jagannath and from the temple. So what he did actually, he told him that he's supposed to make 52 preparations for Jagannath and offer to him. So this was how to... this was what he was supposed to do. So the king got very angry and he planned to finish Bhaktivinoda Kaur. But he could not just kill him because at that time Bhaktivinoda Kaur was the in charge there in Jagannath Puri, so everybody loved him and he was famous, you know. So he had to figure out the way how to do it, how to assassinate him. And so he managed to organize some yagyam. And at the end of Yangya, the Bhaktivinoda Kaur was supposed to be dead. But at the end of the Yagya, the king's son disappeared. Mm. And he was very disturbed. And in another place, I found out also that the king never offered obeisances to Srimad Bhagavatam and to devotees, you know. And then after all this, he changed. You know? So this was change of heart. And so he started to appreciate Bhagavatam and devotees.
Which of those do you see were prominent?
Actually, in both stories, it was never described that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was angry. Mm-hmm. And in describing, in the seventh Goswami book is described the character of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he said that he never had grudges towards anyone. So this means that no resentment, no anger he ever showed. And in this story with the king, so he was a well-wisher because he engaged him actually in devotional service, you know, to repent for the thing he did. And also, he influenced the father.
Very good. Okay.
Okay, and another short story, I think everybody is, everybody knows this, it's with this Visakhitan, yeah, this was his name, who was singing his Mahavishnu, and he was living just near Jagannath Mandir, and so people were very, they were coming to him, worshipping him, and he was even thinking his Mahaprasad is much better than Jagannath's Mahaprasad, and so they sent Bhaktivinoda Thakur to deal with him. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur managed to send him in a prison, but, I mean, he spoke with him, but not in heaven, so he had to send him to the prison. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daughter got very sick. Like she was like having high fever and getting, you know, unconscious. So even the wife of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying, please let him, you know, out of the prison, you know, because our daughter said, no way, even if we all have to die, you know. So, and every day she used to go to this Baba and, you know, preach to him and ask him to take food because he didn't take any food, you know. But I'm sorry, the person could not change in this situation. And so finally after this they shaved the hair from him and this
so, okay, and
so
what was his problem?
No resentment.
No resentment? No anger?
No anger, yes.
Okay.
And so he accepted the faith, he relied on Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And also, he was a well-wisher and Krishna.
Okay, well-wisher, and he set straight what was proper siddhanta, proper activities of preaching. Ja. Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki! Okay, I want just to yes, a story. Do you have? Okay. And Manjari.
I just want to share something with everyone. A few years back, a friend of mine from Australia named Lata Priya left her body here in Nayapur. She suffered from leukemia for 5 years. And her leaving was most exemplary. She was just a simple housewife in a difficult marriage, you know, not being able to come to the temple as often as she would like. But she loved serving the devotees. She would often cook for them. And I was there when she left her body, and it was most wonderful experience, and just something Mataji's there reminded me that within a few minutes after she left her body, her son came to me and said, do you know why my mother could leave so peacefully and so easily? I said, no, why? Because she never held any grudge against anyone.
It's wonderful. Vaishnava the core key! Remember, holding grudges means holding on. And the things that we hold grudges about is nothing transcendental. So we want to hold on to transcendence. Holding grudges means now every opportunity, every chance is there that something is going to have to happen for us or to us. It's going to allow us to deal with whatever we're holding on to. And in some cases it means taking another body because that's so prominent in our consciousness. Now we have another body. Be able to do some kind of work in the next life so that we don't have to be holding on to any of those things. Speaking of holding on, let's have one more person who is having a hurt, a challenge that they haven't been able to confidently to fully release that can share with us as we close this particular chapter of discussion. Someone who didn't share yesterday who's having someone situation that they having trouble releasing. Okay. You will sit in our our love bombing seat. So if you can give us the summary of that, and then we will allow you to receive some reflection, some help, some considerations, and lots of prayers. So as she share her story, let us be in a prayerful state, that this sharing that she is giving us is a particular area that is of an interference in her own spiritual growth, and her being able to say yes, yes to Krishna, to be ready to accept Krishna's love at every moment, every second. So as each of you who are sharing, you are important to us, we are your servants, so we have a duty and a joy to try to pray, and if possible to offer something that may act as a catalyst to assist. Okay?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
One thing that is, like, as Maharaj was saying, like, hindrance, I think, to my devotional progress is that it's so hard for me to forgive myself for joining the ISKCON. Because when I started joining, I just finished my diploma, and I was supposed to start working. And my mom brought me up and without my father there, and so I was supposed to support him. But when I joined, then I realized that there wasn't any way that I would be able to work. And it has been 4 years now in staying in the temple, and this always comes up. It's just for me to actually be able to go on, it's so difficult, because I always think, you know, I should have done this for my mom. Now I would have been doing this and that and that and that. I know this is the best thing for me to actually be in devotional service. But at the same time, I always go back and think, oh, I could be doing this, I could be doing that, and what about this and that? So, yeah, it has been a really difficult thing.
Okay. Okay, so let's evaluate her plea. So her plea is, she's from a family, there was no father there, mother took care of her, perhaps there was some impoverishment, and she, from a child perspective, could be in a position to try to facilitate the family, stay there to help her mother, who has helped her for so many years, and now she has entered into Krishna consciousness. So there is some pain, some disturbance, some bewilderment, some doubt, some fear that this perhaps wasn't the right way to do whatever was necessary to do, or wasn't the right time, or whatever. But there is some doubt. As she thinks of her mother's destitute situation, and she considers that she is living in the temples, and her life is a life perhaps of some simplicity, but what about her mother and her family who's struggling? So this is a cry for some assistance, some prayers, some guidance to help her to feel more secure about the decision and the choice that she's made as she is trying to go on every day in her own struggles and considering what she's left behind and not facilitating her mother and her family. Okay?
I can see how you feel, because I joined the temple when I was in college. I met the devotees and I graduated, and I always was a little bit reluctant to just not, you know, I was fearful of what my parents would say because they paid for my education, and I felt like I owed them so much. And I was, like you, I was in so much anxiety, like, I know my parents expect me to get a job, but I realize I have a higher goal. And so one devotee was there named Dasara, and he preached to me a couple of points that I think would help you. And I'm not saying at all that getting a job, you know, that you can't still be involved. I'm not saying that at all, but I decided not to get the job because of what this devotee said. And well, he said that there's that verse, and if I say it, I'll probably mess up, but it's Devarshi Bhutata, you know, but you know, the king can remind and wing each other. I mean, it's like you, by watering the root of the tree, you satisfy all of the limbs, and all of the forefathers, all of anyone you ever owed anything to, like all of the living entities you ever killed, or the meat you ate, or the grass you stepped on, everything is fulfilled by just serving Mukunda, the giver of liberation. And that's what that verse said. And just by knowing that, it satisfied my pain that I really would be pleasing my parents, ultimately. I really would be satisfying them, and it really didn't turn out that way. And I'm not saying I wouldn't ever go back now that I'm older to school and to social work, whatever it would be. But that was one thing that I could justify not getting a job and just doing your devotional service, because that is the highest welfare work, and everyone connected to you will greatly benefit. So
that's just one. Okay. Vaishnava Koki. So someone else can share? A few of you who just came in today should understand the space that you walked into here. So we're discussing deep things from the heart about our own hurts and ways we've hurt ourselves, hurts that our gurus have made to us, our associates, our seniors, our juniors, our children, our wives, our husbands. And so we are, and our doubts that we may have even in Krishna, that the idea is that we are trying to look at how to move through anartha nivrittis to be able to honor Krishna's love and also honor the challenges and difficulties that we have, and gradually come to the point that we can do as we have on the bottom, be able to preach nicely, influence the offender, do we have the well-wishing mood toward the agents that may give us hurt. And the greatest hurt, of course, is in some cases where we hurt ourselves. And so her case is a case where she's dealing with some hurt that she's having to try to cope with and trying to rationalize and justify the choice that she's made, looking at some of the consequences that are existing, you know, in the social, economic, and material scene. Can one of the persons share with her, please? No, yes, this is not a new situation, but someone can offer some words of solace to her. Anyone else? Okay. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the mind culture should be in a prayerful state.
Thank you for your courage again. Well, I'd like to relate a personal story. And this story is, I don't know, it's helped a lot of people. I'm not sure it's going to help you, but it's helped a lot of people. And it's a story that's helped me in my own spiritual life. But when I became a devotee, I actually had just finished my degree also. And I was just offered a job with lots of money. And I had an 11-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son. And I had just met the devotees. And I went, my first experience with the devotees was to go on a Rath Yatra. And I immediately fell in love with Lord Jagannath. And I'll show you how much I love I am with Lord Jagannath. So, Lord Jagannath just captured my heart. And I told my husband that I wanted to go and stay in the temple for a week to just kind of be with the devotees for a week. Okay, so that was a week. And after a week, it was like,
okay, I think I'd like to try, you know, to be there a little longer. And my husband was like, you're nuts. What are you talking about? We can do this. From outside, you don't have to go there to do this, to, you know. Anyway, to make a long story short, what happened is that I really got captured by the deities. And I had to make a choice. I told my children at the time, my husband, that I wanted to be with these people. I wanted to learn what this was all about. And I knew to do that, I had to go and live in that environment. So like when you go to school, you gotta be there to do it nicely. And so, so that choice I had to make, and my children did not want to come with me. We had been in mine, and you know, they already grown kids in a way, and they were like, no. And plus, you know, my parents were totally disagree with my mother, because like, as you, I didn't grow up with my father. So my mother, she was like, how could you do this? You just finished getting your master's degree, and you know, so many things, the same thing. You know, you have two children. What are you going to do? This is crazy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I knew, like, that I had to do it. I knew I had to do that. I was, like, getting a calling. Like Christians say, you're getting a calling. So my parents, my mother told me, if you force these children to go, I'm going to take you to court. Wow. You know, get you sued, I'm going to sue you. So that was a decision I had to make. And my children, they decided to stay with my mother. And then my husband said to me, all right, you want to do this? Okay, we can't stay in New York. This is where we joined because, you know, he was a musician and, you know, he's like too much time in New York. He said, we have to go to California. And, you know, if you want for me to do this, you have to move to California. And so I agreed. We moved to California. I left my kids. I left my mother. I left my job. I left everything, my house, my everything, and went with my husband to California. So I lived in California for about 2 weeks, no, maybe a month, and I was getting trained. At that time, I'm sure I was with the group. And I was getting trained, and my husband was washing pots. And his wholeness, Dr. Tirthamaraj, came through. That's awful. And then when I came home that evening, my husband, from being trained at the airport, my husband said, you remember that sannyasi I was telling you about in New York? I said, yeah. He said, he was here. You missed him. You just missed him. I said, yeah, okay. And he said, he wants us to come to Washington, D.C. I said, no way. We just left New York, now we came here. I gave up my kids, I did all these things. What are you talking about? Going to another place, cross country, you know, 3 days of traveling? No. And he said, look, I promise you, if you do this, you'll never regret it. Again, I said, okay. So I did that. I made the cross-country journey, and that's what I did at that time. This was Dr. Tirthamaraj, who was a sannyasi at the time. And then Bhakti Tirthamaraj kindly arranged for me to go to Africa and my husband in about a year of serving him, leading them. So we were sent to Africa. In that time, my children would not speak to me. They wouldn't even talk to me. I mean, I would try to call them. They're like, no, my mother would say, they don't want to talk to you. So it's like I had to experience a death of my children. But I knew in my heart that I was doing the right thing. I knew that. I don't know, you know, of course, I got so much support from my spiritual master, but there was something very internal, super soul, you could say, that kept letting me know it was going to be okay, it was going to be okay, it was going to be okay. My daughter went through her teenage years without a mother. That's a hard time for a child. When a child is a teenager, especially girls, they need their parents. They need at least their mother. So my daughter went through that period, and it was a very hard time for her, very, very difficult period. She was very rebellious. My mother had a hard time, and my son went through a hard time. But I just, that's why I shared yesterday that I prayed, and I kept serving, and throughout all of that, went to, you know, I would go back to New York from Africa to do Sankirtan. I would connect with my daughter, but she was very distant. And I just kept praying and kept taking the support. Some years later, I had an opportunity when my daughter got through that period to talk with her. And she told me this really nice thing that I will never forget. She says, "Mom, because you are such a righteous person, my life is the way my life is today." She's a very God-conscious person. She's not a devotee, but she's very devoted in her way. And when I go to her home now, she just takes such nice care of me, you know, in a devoted mood. She comes, you know, to the farm where we live. And so the relationship, it grew in a very meaningful way. It grew spiritually. Had I stayed out there with her, I may have been able to do so many material things, I have no doubt. But those things are, as you know, they're very temporary. And we can experience some temporary happiness with those things, but ultimately, we would never be happy, because we know we have a calling. We know that. We know we're being called. We know we're in a mission. We know. So I guess what I would like to share is pray to connect with Super Soul. If for some reason there's no external situation that is giving you peace, then Super Soul is like the two birds. You know, when we turn to the Super Soul, whenever we turn to the Super Soul is there to direct us. And if it is that you're supposed to go out and work and support your family and have a job, and Super Soul will direct you. And of course, the spiritual master is the external manifestation of the Super Soul. So again, as I was saying yesterday, I can't emphasize enough this mood of self-expression. Because if we're not able to express those deep things with our spiritual master or people that we love very dearly, then it will be very difficult to make progress. So that you're doing this, I feel, is very courageous, just to sit here and speak about this. And just pray. I hope that story has helped, because for me it was really hard. It was very, very, very hard. Many times I just cried. But had I not done that, maybe some of the African boys would be here today.
Okay. Vaishnava the Gorgi. Just real quick. How many can identify that there are definitely times in their life when they are wondering if they really made the best decision by joining when they did, or they made the best decision by remaining in the mission of preaching when so many other things are going on within the family with what you have left behind? How many have had that reflection from time to time? So, about a third of the devotees. Okay. You raising your hand for?
I didn't understand the question.
The question I was asking is, how many have had the experience where there have been times in their Krishna consciousness when they have felt that they joined at the wrong time, or they should not be so actively involved in the preaching mission, but should be at home with their family or doing some other things? Okay. No problem. Okay. So hopefully some things that were said were of some benefit. Maybe I'll just tell you quick my own case also. A little similar. I'm the youngest in the family and the only one to go to university. As I said, we were raised by my mother, which was in a very impoverished environment. And when I went to the university and I graduated, And of course, my family was expecting that I was going to, you know, do things to support the family. But during my last year at the university is when I got very involved in Krishna consciousness, and when I graduated, I started, you know, getting fully involved. And so I also had some reflections sometimes. I was thinking, my mother raised 6-7 kids, and she's an invalid, she's a diabetic, and what kind of son am I that I should be there taking care of her economic and social well-being? And for the first couple of years, it was very painful because I'm very close to my mother, and I knew the way that she was struggling in her situation. And I was wondering, why am I doing this? And especially, you know, I graduated from Princeton, and I was, my first service was washing pots in New York. And so I'm wondering, what am I doing? I'm washing pots, and my family is there struggling, and what's going to come of my life? I mean, what is this all about? But and you know, then I would wonder, is my mother really thinking that I'm just being so irresponsible? And of course, many times that she was. But as years went on, make a long story short, that totally changed. And it was the opposite. She became, you know, very supportive. And there are many cases where Krishna will just change your brother, sister, mother, father's heart just by the fact that one continues in devotional service themselves. There are many stories that when our parents have left their bodies, that Krishna gave them some very special mercy because of the fact that we were engaged in devotional service. And again, if we look at the lives of the acharyas, we see that they were so much full of compassion that they would not allow themselves only think about their immediate biological connections only. They were so much ready to try to facilitate and serve the world and see the world as their family. So they stepped forth. You won't find practically one acharya who the family just said, yes, yes, this is wonderful, go for it. We're so happy, huh? That there was some disappointment. But they had a mission to do. And so practically every devotee is somewhat similar. That we are on call, we have a mission. And basically we've taken birth to be involved in the process of devotion. Okay, unless somebody has a burning case they would like to share, we're going to go on to another activity. Is anyone who has a burning problem which they feel that they really need to have a little prayer for it and one or two people to help them to focus on it? Anyone? Okay, yes. We don't want to pass an opportunity to help each other. Can handle this one.
First of all, I'm going to give because I'm very excited to get 80% of participation, so I'm hoping I get 80% of the giftfulness by being here. It's a bit of a, I don't know where to start, it's a bit of a complex story, okay. But I'll try.
Just try to summarize the essence for us.
Okay, about 3.5 years ago, I got a notice of the ISKCON management to 60 days notice to move off the Hare Krishna farm that we lived on. No reason cited. I had 3 children and I was pregnant at the time. And we tried to communicate with authorities why this was happening. There had been a lot of trouble in the temple and also a lot of physical problems in the temple. Someone was just, I'm causing a lot of offences to my family as well. I give my husband heaps, I give my children heaps. Just not a very nice environment. I'm here hoping that actually I worked out that I don't actually know, you know, like you said, you have to name it. So I don't really know what's going on. So I can't even name it to be able to release it. I'm just, it's
okay.
Okay.
So we've heard her situation. Is that he's in a community and there's been some problem. Authorities have sensed or feel that there's some problem. It's not clear in her family's understanding of why they're being dealt with the way that they're being dealt with. We are emphasizing trying to consider how somebody else may be thinking, why they're reacting, why they're doing what they're doing. She's not clear, but what she knows is that she's experiencing pain in her family because of the things that have happened. So someone can offer some practical reflections and what they feel can be perhaps be done or be approached, or what steps can be taken at this point. We realize that practically constantly we're having situations that test our faith. And as we have situations that test our faith, it's a chance to get boons by Krishna blessings. Just as some of your teachers, you give your students tests, and the test is it's an imposition, seemingly, it's a challenge, but it's really an opportunity. For that opportunity we can fail, or that opportunity we can somehow come out of it in a victorious way. So these are definitely activities as part of the course. They come in all kinds of forms. It comes from all different types of relationships. And we, again, we're the receivers and we're the givers. But the question is, to what degree do we get out of that whole cycle? And our reflections on how to get out of this. Now, two other things we want to do before we come to more of a close. I'd like us to focus more on personalized forgiveness, that there are certain categories that offenses are made, certain categories where hurt is projected on someone else. And so we know that sometimes those of us in managerial positions, we give hurt. There are times when it's done unconsciously, sometimes consciously. There are times when those who they're trying to care for, many of you are parents, and nobody has hurt you more than your children. And some of you have had chance to be hurt very badly by those who are supposed to be protecting you, as your mentors, etc. And some have been very hurt by their friends, so-called, who now have turned into maybe adversaries. And of course, we were discussing how we've been hurt ourselves. Some of you shared hurt that came in the term in form of alcoholic parents, came in the form of sexual abuse, in some cases incest. Some have been hurt. The spiritual one, two, in some cases maybe three spiritual masters have disappointed them. And so we're looking at how we individually can be freed from the hurt, while we try to understand how Krishna has let this come upon us, what was the advantage that's there that we're supposed to learn from, to rush back to Him faster. And as we look at our own individual case, we also look at that has affected and influenced others. So we want to make some personal apologies on behalf of certain categories. Let me explain that. Or let me demonstrate it. I'd like to see the hand of any of you who are managers. Just raise your hand. Anyone who's managing something. Okay? Can you please come in the front? Please. We stand on this side. Anyone who's involved in managing. So here we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 illustrious managers. Little Lord Brahmas helping to manage their own universe in some way. Or we have those who are being servant of the servant. In some dynamic ways they are sacrificing, extending themselves. So I would like on this side, and I want a limited number, there may be so many, but I would like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I like about 6 people who feel that they have gotten some serious hurt from someone who was managing their lives. Someone who was managing a project that they were involved in, who has wounded them in some way. I like 6 or 7 people to come forth who have experienced, a wound in that way from a manager. Please. Okay. Thanks. I know every one of us could come up, but we sort of. So, first, I'd like the managers in unison to repeat after me. By Krishna's mercy, we have a chance to render service and influencing other people's lives. We also have a life. We also have a personality. We have good intention to try to do our best. But sometimes our own life and our own personality, it may add and help someone else's life. And sometimes our own personality and our own life, it may interfere in some ways. Personality and life may interfere. Many of our decisions are so wonderful and we are very proud of them. And some of our decisions we feel were very stupid. But you know, we are all in this together. We're all held accountable for what we do. And we are praying that we can become wiser and wiser. To be able to execute our duties. So that we will give greater joy, protection, and happiness to those under our care. Now, some of those who have been offended, like you repeat after me. So, we are the walking wounded. From your activities, we are scarred. It is not very pleasant to have these wounds. We realize that nothing can happen, not a blade of grass can happen without ultimately Krishna's control. But it is easy to say that, but when something negative happens, it is very painful. We do realize that we are in this and trying to serve Prabhupada altogether. We all have a duty to learn from each other and to help each other. So where we are holding anger and thoughts of revenge, we want to try to become freed of that. We want to even try to be more involved in helping you so that you'll do the right thing. And from the pain that we've experienced, we feel we have a duty to try to help as best as we can so others will not experience that. We have to do our best so others will not experience that. So we are particularly today ready to use our pain and let it become strength for us. Recognizing that just as we pain, that there are things that have pained you also. So, in conclusion, we do not want to carry emotional hurt. We do not want you to have emotional hurt. We want all of, in each case, we want to be able to have a deeper Krishna consciousness. So this is a process, but we want to work on this in more of a profound way. Now you both offer obeisances to each other. Everybody down. Once you come to move this talk, you the name of Tapatita Namapavavio Vaishnavavio Namo Namaha. Now I want to, you can take your seats. I'd like a group to come here of women who've been abused by men. Don't run all of a sudden now. We're in a group. Okay. Okay. Now, 1, 2, 3, 4. I just want 5 men to volunteer. The first five men up here in the front, please come. Come on this side. There's 1, 2, 3, 4. Any other male volunteer would like to come forth? Please come. Okay. I just need one more man. Please come. Anyone? Okay. So I'd like you men to repeat after me. As men, we have a responsibility.
As men, we have a responsibility.
To be the protector of women.
To be the protector of women.
Cows.
Cows.
Brahmins.
Brahmins.
Elderly.
Elderly.
But sometimes we may fail in those services.
But sometimes we may fail in those services.
We realize that civilization suffers when we fail in these areas.
We realize that civilization suffers when we fail in these areas.
We as men, we are the products. As we have come from the womb of a mother.
We have come from the womb of a mother.
We also have sisters.
We also have sisters.
We want the best care for our mothers.
We want the best care for our mothers.
We want the best protection for our sisters.
We want the best protection for our sisters.
We know that often we as men folks may deny protecting as we are supposed to. We may be short in giving the protection that we are supposed to.
We may be short in giving the protection that we are supposed to.
Sometimes out of our own pain, we may even abuse others.
Sometimes out of our own pain, we may even abuse others.
We do not understand the specific hurt that you are holding on to.
We do not understand the specific hurt that you are holding on to.
But we can experience in our own way emotional hurt from time to time.
But we can experience emotional hurt from time to time.
Today we want to apologize for those men who have given emotional hurt to you. We want to offer our devotion and our prayers for your healing. Our devotion and our prayers for your healing. Please accept our apologies on behalf of those men who have not protected you. On for grace.
Please accept our apologies on behalf of your
Vaishnava Kaur Ki. Of all. But we do want to be concerned about each person's ability to be able to be joyful in trying to serve Krishna. And as a spiritual family, a success is a success for us all. Acceleration of growth and advancement in Krishna consciousness, for one, helps the entire culture of devotion to accelerate. Every time someone falls down, every time someone engages in deviation, it takes away from the collective effort of trying to re-spiritualize the entire world. We see that expression when it comes to our guruship and our children. That the success is very wonderful and pervasive, and the failure is just as much pervasive and devastating. So we know that a lacking on our part as an institution, which we all have some responsibility for, is the proper care, stimulation, protection of our children. So first I want our teachers to repeat after me. As children, you are our pride. We are, as adults, like pioneers. Pioneers make a lot of mistakes.
They try a lot of things, some work and some don't. They themselves sacrifice a lot. We as adults and teachers and parents, we are pioneers. We definitely feel we must try our best and try even better. We know sometimes in pioneering, we have not always made the best decisions for the children. We realize that this is very serious. We have seen some of the effects of this. Some of our children have even gone away. We want to make our commitments to try to give greater protection to all of you. Through our teaching, and especially through our own examples. For any pain that you have personally experienced, we as teachers are collectively begging for forgiveness.
We as teachers are collectively begging for forgiveness.
And we are particularly praying that we will be personally used to help to guide you more in the future. To guide you in the future. We love you.
We love you.
And we will prove that even more in the future. Please accept our obeisances.
Please accept our obeisances.
Vaishnava Gaur Ki. So, last category. We have any men who are married? Any grahasthas here? Or just bachelors? Still waiting for the divine one to appear. There's a couple there. Please come. There's a few others. Any others? Okay, they're shy. Are your wives here? No? Okay, we'll have you sit down then. It's okay. I thought your wife's may have been here. Let us just look at one last category. Let's see. Let's have a category of any of devotees who their main hurt is their spiritual master. Some misunderstanding, some confusion, or your guru has left. Someone whose main hurt, emotional hurt, is their guru. Please come. Men as well as women. Please. Anyone else? So, as a spiritual master, I want to apologize on behalf of my brothers who have taken the service of trying to represent Srila Prabhupada. We are like young children who are gradually growing up. In the process of our growth, sometimes there is some pain, some hurt. Some of us have minimized what it means to deal with people's lives. Some of us have never really been fathers, parents, husbands. Some of us have never even had jobs. In the material world. So it is rather bewildering in taking on such responsibilities. Some of us have only known the example of Srila Prabhupada as guru. In the process, we have thought that we could act simply. And therefore, we have brought harm. See us is very similar to a young lady, young girl who's only 11, 12 years old, who has become pregnant. And so now she's a mother, but she's also a child. If she only thinks that she's a child, then her own baby will even suffer even more. But if she thinks that she's a mature parent, her baby will also suffer. This is our dilemma. We are now having responsibility for parenting, but we're still somewhat like children ourselves as we're growing and growing. And so, please forgive us where we have brought some harm, some of our managerial decisions. Please forgive us where we have not simply been around and personal to deal with the specific problems. And please forgive us where we've gotten too involved in areas that are outside of our understanding, brain, and ability to bring sufficient help. Let us each remind ourselves that we are in this together and that we are to grow from our successes as well as from our struggles and bewilderments. Just as in a family, sometimes the children can have so much affection for the mother and father that they cause the mother and father to come up to a higher standard. Sometimes the father even can be a drunkard. And by the fear of the child, the father gives up the alcohol to be able to properly to care for the child and receive the child's affection that he feels he's not worthy of. So yourselves, see what you can do within your family, spiritual family, to help give strength so that it will help us to raise into a higher standard. Where we have made some mistakes, try to see it more as a mistake, or mistakes that was made, rather than the fact that you were not sufficiently cared for. Remind yourself that it's really about you and Krishna. Krishna coming through. And Krishna will come through, your spiritual master, will come through sadhu, to the degree that you are hungry for Krishna. So we ask forgiveness. Some of our actions have caused you to lose some of that hunger for Krishna, or to feel comfortable with Krishna coming through us to be able to help you. All our basis, especially for those who have left, who have given you instructions that they themselves later did not follow. For those who you've given your life to, you'll find they've given their life to some aspect of Maya. And offer obeisances on behalf of the pain they've given you. And I pray that in the future that you'll be able to be healed from that, to the point that you will be able to heal us. Please have another. So, our last exercise, I think I need to write something on the board so we'll be able to understand. See how much time we have. In Vedic paradigm, there is four states of consciousness. Jagrat, Swapana, Susupti, and Chiruya, the waking state, sleep state, the deep sleep state, and the transcendental state. In Western terminology, there's what's called beta, alpha, theta, and delta. Beta is just in some waking state. Alpha. Maybe some linkage. It's close. It's right under here. So beta put B-E-T-A. Then 2 put alpha, A-L-P-H-A. We put theta, T-H-E-T-A. And then 4 delta, D-E-T-A. Now, beta hyper makes a person very passionate, fully absorbed in the physicality of the externals. The good side of beta is that it makes you alert. All of these states, the right amount is good, too little is bad, too much is unhealthy. Alpha state is like a light hypnotic state. In the alpha state, too much alpha brings dullness, it affects our concentration. When we watch TV, listen to music sometimes puts us in an alpha state. This alpha state, one is 5 times more susceptible to whatever the stimulation, whatever the object is, whatever the activity. So even when one is in a beta, the alert waking state, it's not nearly as powerful as the alpha state in terms of what is internalized, what can be learned also. There are special techniques, like accelerated learning techniques, where one can learn languages very fast, remember things, by putting the mind in an alpha state through the learning process. Anyway, I just mentioned I don't have time to go into deep. This theta is somewhat deeper. It is a light sleep. The alpha is you're alert, but not fully align the senses to get immediate stimulation of whatever the external environment is. A little more slow. And then the delta, alcohol and drugs, for instance, puts the mind somewhat into this state here. And the delta state, D-E-L-T-A, is a state of full sleep. What's mode of ignorance. And so this state can cause sickness. We have too much of the mind. This is like what happens when the mind is focused in different ways, different brain waves is there, different things is happening in different states. Too much of this state will bring madness, it even bring possession. The body becomes overtaken in different ways. So what we're mentioning here is that in each of these areas, something is going on in the brain, a different level of receptivity is taking place. Now, our last exercise is I'm going to do a few things to help us to experience the alpha state. Alpha state is not so hard to access. You just allow yourself just to think of a pleasant environment. The brain waves change. You allow yourself to reflect on something that is very pleasant to you. Your home environment, a friend, some sensation, some impression, some environmental condition, some stimulation that is satisfying and peaceful. The mind will pretty fast go into an alpha state. At that state, what you hear, what you experience, 5 times more powerful. So, because we want to, these last few minutes, try to address some of the emotional hurt, I'm going to help you yourself to enter into an alpha state. Now, basically, what we're going to do is I want everybody just to sit down or be in a situation where you're comfortable. And some people will just call this a guided meditation. All it really is helping you to relax, to close your eyes, and then for you just to listen to some instructions that I'm suggesting to you. What I suggest to you, you just try to reflect them. That's all. And that way, body is relaxed, mind becomes relaxed. And then what is being said, what you're thinking, is at least 5 times more powerful in terms of reflecting on the thoughts and on the words. But if we can just close the door there, we're going to have people going in now for the next 5 minutes. Now what I'm going to do, so that you understand it, I'm just going to ask you in about a minute or two, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. I want to just say a few things to help you to try to relax into your body. And then I'm just going to suggest a few things for you to reflect on while you're in a relaxed state. Now, this is late time in the day, and it's easy to go to sleep. You find yourself being so relaxed that you go to sleep, that's okay. Just don't snore. Well, you find that, the things that we're suggesting, you know, for you to do in terms of relaxation, if it doesn't to relax you, and you have other thoughts or other places you want to reflect on, other impressions, then do. You know, that's up to you. But if you can, try to just listen to the things that I'm saying. And we're gonna go on a little trip. You know, maybe to Vrindavan, we'll see. Maybe we'll go early to Vrindavan. Some of you will be going there. So, but the idea is that we want to touch a certain part of our psyche that can give us a little more strength to look closer at some things that have been blocked for us, or some hurt, some revenge, some disappointments, some separations, some rejections, despairs, some betrayal that has caused us not to be able to access the divinity that, you know, is there, that's accessible. Now, to assist with the alpha state, I'm going to play a little music. And the music is basically a repetition of the name of Radharani and Krishna. And so, our concern is, of course, to be able to beg for the mercy of the divine worship to assist us in being able to be better servants of them, better servants of the sadhus, better servants of the gurus. So, again, alpha state is 5 times more susceptible. You're going to control this yourself. I'm just going to say a few things to help you just to be able to relax them. So the best thing right now is everybody will put their feet on the floor. Your energy on the floor is best. If you're sitting, put your feet on the floor. As many of you can, it's probably better if you can sit in a chair if enough seats are available. It'll be easier. You'll more prone to go to sleep if you were in the lotus at night. We're asking you to listen to my own words. So today has been a long day, and in some cases our bodies are rather tired. But our intelligence and mind is active because we want to use whatever we can in Krishna's service. So first I want you just to feel as if your feet are very heavy. You can feel the tightness around your ankles. Now you're feeling like a soothing breeze that's coming across your feet. It's like you're walking out in the jungle, and you're feeling the water being very soothing. But now the water is only on your feet. You feel a relaxing, soothing sensation going up to your knees and now to your waist. You feel that the bottom part of your body is very much at peace. It's actually very relaxed. Now you feel up to your chest, similar type of relaxation. Now the neck. Now you feel throughout your whole body. Feel very relaxed. I want you to breathe in very deeply. Inhale. And then exhale. I want you to do this 3 times. And each time you feel like you're releasing anxiety. You breathe in. You're feeling peace as you breathe in. And you breathe out. You're letting out anxiety. You breathe in. And you're letting out anxiety. Let's just do it one more time. Deep breathe in. And now breathe out. I want you to imagine that you are sitting at a desk, and at this desk there's a pad in front of you and a pen. And with this pad and pen, you are writing your biography. So you're writing so many things that have happened to you in this lifetime. There are many wonderful experiences, and there are many difficult experiences. You're writing all of these down, just like a book. But it's the book of your own life. As you're feeling very relaxed as you're writing, you, the soul, is now stepping out of that body that's sitting next to the chair. So you're looking down at yourself, sitting at the desk, writing. You're realizing that you've lived so many lifetimes. You have so many stories, so many biographies, but you are none of those stories. It's only a chapter in your life. Especially when you think of the hurt that you've experienced and the pain. Now you can separate yourself from that because it's pages in the book. Just one moment of a lifetime, of an experience, of a chapter. It's helping you to realize that you have sometimes been extremely happy, and sometimes you've been extremely sad. Sometimes you've given great happiness to others, and sometimes you've given pain. Just as you are thinking about this, the Lord in the heart now steps out of your heart. And you see Lord Shyam, who is very beautiful. And he's smiling at you, his soul, and looking at you, the physical body, sitting at the desk. You, as a soul, totally enraptured in captivation with Lord Shyam, because you both are fully aware that this hurt was only a moment, a page in your biography. Now the Lord looks at you, and you're looking at the Lord. His beautiful smile, his lotus-like eyes, his attention is fully for you. And he begins to speak to you, and he's penetrating your heart. And he says, my beloved child, I know that you have suffered in many ways, in different bodies. I know there were times when you thought that even I was not giving you protection. I know there were times when you doubted if you should continue to worship. I know that there were times you were hurt by managers, disappointed, sometimes by your mentors, sometimes those who you gave the most care and affection toward did not reciprocate the way you expected. I know there were times when you felt fully abandoned. But I want you to know that I was always there with you, that I will always be with you, and that these are pages. These are experiences for allowing you to rush back, receive my full love. You should know that your feelings of separation has given me great pain. And therefore, in the background, I have made some experiences very difficult for you, so that you would not be comfortable in being away from my love. I know that you had difficult experiences before you joined the spiritual society, and in some ways your experiences were more intense once you start trying to come to me. You should know this was my way to speed up your return back to my loving kingdom. Just as I appeared once before Narada, and I told him he would never see me again, but that he should continue enduring, persevering. So I want you to reflect in this way, that you are not just those, that book in front of you, nor are you the body that's sitting in a chair that has undergone these experiences. You are an eternal part of me, and therefore you are eternally perfect, but are just covered over momentarily, waiting to return. Just like in the case of Sita, that Ravana only affected the Maya Sita. That what had happened to you, to your body, what happened to your mind and your psyche, is not the real you. You are whole. You are me. You are a part of my eternal romance, my eternal affection. So Lord Shyam smiles at you and tells you to enter back into the physical body, to close the book, and to be reminded that your harmful experiences are only pages in the book. And Lord Shyam tells you that you should always remember that he is waiting for your return. And the moments that you have just shared will be with you eternally, that you will eventually be in eternal love eternal protection, eternal shelter, and perfection. So now that you're back into the body, I want you to close the book, put it to the side. I want you to breathe in, breathe out. I want you to breathe in 3 more times as you feel that you're back into the body, but realizing that this body is only a chapter of the book, and the emotional hurt is part of Krishna's special arrangement to bring you back to his divine association. As you hear music, Radhe, Shyam, that you will remind yourself whenever you start feeling the pain of that emotional hurt, or you allow yourself to let the mind go back into reflection, that this body is just sitting at a desk undergoing experiences in this lifetime, but you are much more than that. More than the body, more than the emotions. So you take 2 deep breaths, then you just very slowly open up your eyes. So, what I'd like us to do is last 5 minutes. If you'd like, maybe 2 or 3 of you, just to share with us in this little experience of reflecting from an alpha platform, is what kind of impressions came to you from that experience. What sort of thoughts, what type of realizations that you can share with us. Who would like to come to share with us an impression that they were receiving from this little exercise, the reflection? Would like to start? Yes, please.
What I was feeling was really, really strong, and I was saying, if only my mother could be in this chair, if only she could hear these words, and I just wanted to give that to her.
Someone else? Mm-hmm. So what she was feeling, she felt that beneficial for her, but if somehow she was able to extend this benefit to her mother. Someone else? Please. Each person can experience different things according to their reflection.
Hare Krishna. I just got a nice remembrance that actually that Krishna is our ever well wisher, you know? And that he's always with us through whatever we've done, however many times we've turned our back from him. He's always been there. Now I just got an image of Giriraj's face with that big smile. And when Maharaj mentioned Radhe's name, I just got an image of this beautiful, beautiful smile coming from Divine Mother, so that's very meaningful. Thank you.
Someone else? That space we can go to any time. Krishna has no favors. When we find that we're experiencing excessive emotional hurt, we can allow ourselves to be reminded that this is a moment in existence, and that all of these things can act as a catalyst, keeping us more eager for the goal
So all these millions of years, I've been looking for love and affection in the wrong place. I've just been kicked and kicked and kicked, but now, my dear Lord, I'm going to turn to you because that's the only, you're the only person who can really have perfect love and affection with.
Sometimes we have to remind ourselves that it's really just about ourselves and Krishna anyway. Like that little poem I read, you know, about Mother Teresa. She's not a Vaishnava, but how she was saying that this may happen and that may happen, but do it anyway. Because ultimately what we're doing is for Krishna. When we forget that, then the details become more overwhelming. The personality issues become more impacting upon us. When we don't forget that, then these things can just remind us that we really don't want to be involved in the duality. One or two last verses. Please.
As I was trying to think of what's in that new book, I was confused. I was trying to think, what should I write first? This or that? This was nice, this was horrible, this was in this life, and then I asked to step out and see that this is just a one book. And I thought it's so insignificant. All these things that are happening, they're really so insignificant in the whole picture. There's so much more that we're missing out on. I'm just so concerned with this.
In our example, the board overlooking the bad, looking at the good, there's just so many wonderful things that have happened in all of our lives. So many wonderful possibilities. But if you become so possessed by, you know, some problems, those problems will take over our entire consciousness. All the stories of the acharyas that we discuss, that they had so many problems. But it did not slow them down. It did the opposite. They transformed, preached to the offender, or took responsibility.
It's beautiful music, and those beautiful words held up in the shan. I wish to write, I wish to reflect. I've forgiven, I find it difficult to forget. Lately, lots of dreams, lots of emotions, and especially here, it's been very, very amazing. My pictures, my mental dream state right now, by listening to the music is increasing. Two pictures, one was of my good sister, telling my spiritual master to take the medicine, and 10 minutes later she reminded him, take the medicine, and Gurudev kept writing at his desk. Half an hour later, she came, he didn't say, you have to take the medicine, now! And she was acting like his mom. Gurudev turned around like a child and said, don't shout at me, don't need to shout. And the second picture was of another one, my brother. He's very big, very tall, and he carried Gurudev like a child. And the music was going on, it was increasing, I just kept thinking about those pictures, and it's really nice. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I
was describing how she looked like a regular old biography. Then I started looking at so many of the chants, the traumatizing and different experiences I've had in my life. But then, he said, you step back from that and the Lord is in your heart comes out. I got this picture of Mount Dhammachandra. Even throughout all of these experiences, Krishna's love and support has always been there in this lifetime. And then, as you're speaking, I can see that throughout all of my lifetimes, all of my experiences, Krishna's always been there. And I need to become more serious about giving up on my attachments that I have and connecting with them and thinking about it.
We have our major book of the Bhagavad Gita. And it slips our mind that Arjuna is representing every person. That Arjuna is having to deal with some very serious decisions and challenges. And those challenges are from those who are closest to him. But Krishna is there. Still, Arjuna has to do the necessary. So we each have these confrontations and struggles. The same Krishna is here.
let the reality go, because it was very nice because I was seeing in real. So then, when I was supposed to write, I just wrote, where is that person? And then, I'm here, I was here. So it was very difficult to close my eyes, and then I had intense pain of feeling fear that that person might go away. Again, when you said we should step out from the boundary before we ever tonight, because I finally realized there is no boundary, there is no disappearing, there is no going, there is no going away here, you know, and the more I try to serve the person is more here. So the voice, your voice in Krishna's face, they just became one. And I felt
so just a minute or two less comment. Because I want to thank all of you for participating in these 12 hours. We have in many places in 4 days. You've shared your hearts. You've shared things that are very dear to you. Things that have been troubling you for some time in some cases. You've allowed us all to participate in that space for a little while. You've allowed each of us to have a chance to, as each of you have offered something, we've all had a chance to reflect and to pray and to hope and pray that we'll be able to move out of that pain. We've seen that each of us in our own ways are carrying some hurt. Unless we are just totally living alone and not associating or not caring, we're bound to experience some pain because someone will disappoint us. Someone will not be there when we expect or need them the most. Someone will miscue something that we've said or done, and will give us sometimes these emotions, revenge, disappointment, loss, etc. But we do want to remind ourselves that that is the momentary pattern of the material world. It has never been anything different than a place of massive confusion. It's only a matter of degree. According to what age, according to what yuga it is. And Krishna allowed the material world to be so wonderful, if he allowed relationships to be so wonderful, then where would there be the need for trying to have the most authentic, genuine, pure relationships? If the transitory or temporary relationships could be fully satisfying, we wouldn't have any real catalyst to try to go deeper. And we say, well, but what about when a relationship happened between those who are supposedly representatives of Krishna? Can Krishna make it easier for us to learn by being able to have greater connection with the teachers? But there are so many ways of how we learn from teachers. There's so many ways of how we learn how to become teachers. We learn from the positive as well as the negative. Unfortunately, for most of us, our greater learning happens when there's a crisis in our life. Our deeper access of our consciousness, deeper aspects of our consciousness, is more likely to happen when there is confusion, when there is trauma, when there's problems, because at that point we can curse Krishna, we can run away, or it's at that point we can try to create deeper to understand what is the nature of our experience, why such things are happening. It's those times that we have greater destitution. And so as we're chanting the Lord's name, we're actually saying, Dear Radha, dear Krishna, take it away, bring it on. Take away anything that's interfering with my growth and advancement towards you, and bring on whatever I need to experience that will help to sever my attachments to my senses and to unhealthy relationships and unhealthy attachments. And sometimes the way that Krishna responds is not always the way that we expect. But we should always remind ourselves that destitution, desperation, anxiety, and hurt are just covered over intense adventure, love, and romance. There's nothing in the universe but praying. There's nothing in existence but the different permutations of prema. When that prema comes in contact with kama, then it temporarily takes on certain forms. So that intensity of separation, of loss, of anger, and hurt is really just covered over intense ecstasy, bond, love, romance, and adventure. So Krishna's in the background, calling on the fools, playing on the fools, inviting us. And the little mental reflection that we have is really parallel to the profound reality, is that the Lord's love is always there. Has never left us, and is inviting us back as quickly as possible. But just as when Lord Brahma stole the car for the boys and calves, that it was only a moment in time, that we know that once we are back with the Lord, that the times we were away and experiences that we had that gave us this emotional hurt in many lifetimes is only moments. But to the degree that we hold on to the bodily conception, to that degree, the emotional hurt will not only prevail, but it will even intensify. So, as we move on to our different activities and services in our different countries, try to revisit the experience in the course. It's not just a class, not just a course, but it was an exercise to access transformation. We all have grown by trying to pray for each other, listening, looking at our own cases, and thinking about somebody else's issue or concern. And so let it also remind us that we're not the only one who've gone through certain crises in our life, that there's others. And last, we said the best way to learn and grow is to teach. So what we have felt through our own hurt, let that act as a campaign to help to minimize that kind of hurt that others may experience. And last, let us remind ourselves that we are all in this together. Whether we're the managers, whether we're the students, whether we're the teachers, whether we're the gurus, whether we're disciples, we're all in this together. And the end result is that Krishna is evaluating every single person based on what their response is, especially in spite of the obstacles and blocks that are really tests for us to come back to us. So, less and less we want to play into the duality, and more we want to preach nicely and influence their finger, want to be the well-wisher of others, and what to say of ourselves. We don't want to continue being our worst enemy. We're making ourselves physically sick, emotionally bankrupt, and spiritually we are procrastinating. We are holding on to hurt because we're calling ourselves victims, and we're saying, really, Krishna, you are unfair because you've allowed this to happen to me. So, constantly were saying, Krishna, I'm not coming to you with haste, because this is what you do. And so, too much in pain. And Maya would love it. Maya would love just the thing that can help us was to turn against it. The other devotees all around the world, but sometimes they're not ready to deal with their test, their battle, etc. And they run out of the association of Vaishnavas. Just what is needed to help them, they run away from because of the difficulty of emotional hurt. So, that is just prema that is covered over. We don't want to give up intensity. We want to transform that intensity. Put it at the lotus of the Radhamana. Love all of you very much. I thank you for helping me to grow. By listening to your story, I was also praying this time and praying to Srila Prabhupada, please allow me to have some strength, some ability to be able to minimize the pain that some of the servants are experiencing. We can be more joyful in our services as we associate with sadhus. Thank you very much.
Vaishnavi Jai.